I'm living a movie, not living by rules. It's just a movie, don't lose your cool.
Hi, welcome to another episode of Spoiler Movie Reviews on the Blackout Tips Premium Podcasting Network. This is where we review movies that you either have seen already, don't ever plan on seeing, or simply do not care about being spoiled because we spoil the shit out of movies. Today, I'm joined by a very special guest. He's been on the BlackoutTips.com podcast, or maybe if you've listened to Nerd of Mouth, you might have heard of him. If you watch At Midnight, you might see him occasionally. If you follow him on Twitter, he's the Mike Lawrence. It's comedian Mike Lawrence. What's going on, Mike?
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good, man. I appreciate you you doing this for me. I was talking about this movie on Facebook, and Mike chimed in with what I thought was a very surprising review. He enjoyed it, so I said, man, it would be nice to have that perspective on the show. I'd like to cover all bases here.
Yeah, I will preface this by saying I don't think that this is a great movie. I think that this is a really fun movie. Makes it great.
There's nothing wrong with that, man. That happens a lot for me. Also, you can check him out. He's headlining Caroline's this weekend, 7:30 on Saturday. Sunday. 7:30 on Sunday, guys. If you go out there Saturday, you will be 24 hours early. You can wait in line like the iPhone and just stand outside. That's what I would do. But Sunday at 7:30, you can check him out. His website is MikeLawrence.com. MikeLawrenceComedy.com. All right, man. So let's talk about this movie first of all. It's Nonstop, starring Liam Neeson. The guy with the glasses that talks to him at the beginning, he's the guy who did it. See, that's why this is spoiler movie reviews, guys. If you were just casually listening to this for the first couple minutes, thinking like, oh, cool, I like Mike Lawrence. Well, now this movie's ruined for you, and I'm sorry, but I put it in the title, so it's not really my fault. So we do a very simple review here. It's what worked for the movie, what did not work for the movie, and then we wrap it up with our review on the More Epic Than Love jump scale from 0 to 5. So let's talk about the actual plot of the movie. My man Liam Neeson's, as he's called on Key and Peele, is an air marshal who is kind of down on his luck. Apparently, he's having some money problems. He's got some alcohol issues. There's a dead kid in the mix, and he's just trying to do his job on a flight from London to New York, you know, needing a little overtime. You guys know how it is in this economy. And he ends up being framed for murder. Someone terrorizes the plane, is killing people one at a time. And unless they get $150 million deposit in an offshore account, every 20 minutes, someone's going to die. So Bill Marks, a.k.a. Liam Neeson's, is the only person who can stop this terrorism. So let's talk about what worked for the film first. Mike, what worked for you?
What worked for me is that this was the most Liam Neeson-y movie ever. You know, like, this is a guy who is a genuinely great actor. He, you know, this is fucking Oscar Schindler we're talking, you know, and Academy Award winner. And I think when his real life wife died, Natasha Richardson, he became this character that he is in the Taken movies and all of that. Like, I think something snapped in his mind of how, like, because he's been in action movies but before her death, but these, like, overly macho, you know, whack job action movies are so fun because you're dealing with a guy who's genuinely talented and doesn't care that he's in something really stupid. And I love that. I don't even, they call him Bill Marks. I don't see him as Bill Marks.
Mm-hmm.
He's just Liam Neeson.
Right. He's Liam Neeson in everything, like, at this point. And it's like Liam Neeson's just having a very bad flight. If I was on a plane somewhere and Liam Neeson just happened to be on my plane in real life, I would expect him to handle shit if things popped off.
Oh, yeah.
Just a plane full of people looking back at Liam Neeson like, you gonna do something? I mean, come on. He's like, well, there's no script. Like, for me, things that worked for this, I thought the relationship with him and Julianne Moore, was pretty cool. Like, kind of a,
I hated her. I thought she was awful. She's a great actress, you know, and, you know, awesome in the Paul Thomas Anderson movies and all that. Mm-hmm. She was so unnecessary in this. Like, this is a great thing about a movie like this. It had three writers. Really? So you can tell that they're fighting each other. You know, no, it needs more of a female presence. No, it needs, you know, and, like, that's the thing, like, that he's an alcoholic and has a dead kid. I think two writers both won an argument. No, he should be an alcoholic. No, he should have a dead kid. Let's give them both.
Right. Know? There's no rule. There's like hours and hours of arguing over the script, and then what? Finally, someone goes, there's no rule saying he can't have a dead kid and an alcohol problem.
Yeah, I mean, what's great is that you have the, that's the thing. Liam Neeson could win an Oscar for playing an alcoholic. And he can win an Oscar in a movie about a guy who loses his daughter, if he wants to.
Right.
Or he could fuck some motherfuckers up on an airplane.
Right.
And I think, like, that's the thing. Like, the rise of Liam Neeson is very much, it says a lot about modern action movies, that these action movie stars, you know, guys of the past, like, you know, Stallone and Schwarzenegger and Van Damme, are rendered completely meaningless when you have good people taking these roles, you mm-hmm. know? If this was a Schwarzenegger movie, it would be unbearable.
Yeah.
But, you know, and it's like, that's what's cool. Liam Neeson, when he kills someone, he doesn't do a catchphrase. He just looks at the camera and goes, you know, right. I miss you, Natasha. You know, like.
Yeah, like, it's, I feel like Harrison Ford kind of started that trend, you know, the, I could do something else, but
Harrison Ford is a decent actor. He's not an incredible actor. You mm-hmm. know, I don't think that he could carry, like, a brilliant. I wouldn't want to see Harrison Ford in a Holocaust movie, is what I'm trying to say.
Right. Okay, I can see you on that.
You know, you love him as Han, and you love him, you know, as Indy, but, like, and he's great in those movies, but he's not like a high caliber. He's been in a few things, but he's not like, I guess, Witness and all that in the past, but he doesn't, like, he can't do what Liam does.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. I can see it, man. Like, I think the thing I was thinking with Harrison is he was the first guy who I saw in those movies and thought, you could do more than this if you wanted. Like, you could do a serious dramatic role rather than this if you wanted to. You know, you don't have to keep doing Jack Ryan movies and Indiana Jones, but he seemed like he was having so much fun, and they were, you know, the movies were entertaining. So I always kind of got that, like, after he got really old, I was like, why didn't anyone else ever pick up that, you know, that template? Why didn't anyone, you know, just pick it up and run with it too? Because it seems like a good way to get paid, and the movies just seem a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, like, for a movie like this, you're going in to see one person, and everyone else is immaterial. True. And, you know, any Liam Neeson movie that starts off with him stirring a glass of whiskey with a toothbrush while looking at a picture of his dead daughter has already won my money. That's what I paid to see. Because that's how I think he actually prepares for roles.
This is a picture of his dead wife and whiskey. Yeah.
the toothbrush is what makes it amazing.
It was, when I saw it, I immediately was like, this is gonna be entertaining no matter how it turns out. There's no way I leave the theater not entertained.
And how fantastic was he in the Lego movie?
He was great, man. I didn't know he had comedic chops like that. He's the best part of that movie. I'm not a huge fan of that movie, but he was my favorite part of that movie. He killed that role.
I'm a massive fan of that movie, and I think he's the best part too. Yeah. I love the Lego movie.
Yeah, he was able to do that. To me, what sold it was the good cop voice. Like when he broke into good cop, I was like, wow, this dude is knocking it out the park. Like, just,
oh, it's hilarious.
Let's talk some more about Nonstop here. Things that work for me. Now, the reason I think Julianne Moore works for me in this movie is because I feel like I'm supposed to hate her, and I did. Like, she was annoying. At one point, I was hoping she was the bad guy because this movie does that thing where you suspect everybody, it could be anybody, right? But like, there's a point where they're like, well, maybe it's her. And I know the writers wouldn't have made it her because it just seems like really, it would just seem kind of stupid. But then I was like, I hope it's hers because I would like to see her die. She's just that annoying to me. Everything about her character there. There's a moment where she dismisses suspicion of her by basically looking at, Liam Neeson like, oh, really? And he's just like, well, okay, I guess it's not you.
That's a great thing about movies like this is that because of the way that they're playing you, you're assuming an intelligence in them that never actually exists. You know, like for instance, they keep showing the bald guy, the big, tall, bald guy from House of Cards, you know, and they keep making you think, oh, that's definitely him. And you're like, all right. And you kind of feel it's a red herring. It's like, that's too obvious. And they're like, no, he's a New York policeman. Right? She's the <it's>.
Right.
You know, hey, what are we going to do about this situation?
Of course we can trust him. The thing I liked about him was that he, true to New York police form, was the guy who was stereotyping the plane the most.
Like, he's like, and then they also do the thing of it's not one person, it's two, the scream factor.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of a cheat because the whole point is that they're playing you to make you guess who is it. And then if it's a cop out answer, you know, it's like if you're asked to say who you think wins a wrestling match and it ends in a disqualification or a no contest, you're like, well, that was never fucking.
Yeah. There's like just two dudes that weren't even on the docket that just come out of the crowd and beat everyone up. And you're like, wait a minute, man. Hold up. This, I would have liked to been able to trace back why this happened. Like that was actually one of the down parts of the movie for me. But, another positive thing that I think happened, I thought there was some pretty, competent acting in the supporting cast, as small as their roles were. I liked the lady with the English accent that was a stewardess. She had a very small role, but, I thought she did well. I thought the pilot, the English pilot who somehow monologues himself into landing a plane. Like that dude.
did you like Lupita? Did you like 12 Years a Stewardess?
She was magnificent. First of all, radiant. And I don't know. She was barely.
She looks like if Grace Jones was a woman.
Right. There's a thing going on this morning where people, want to see her play, Storm in, one of the X-Men movies.
Absolutely. I'd be for that. Holly Berry is terrible in those movies.
She's so bad. I would like to see her play Vixen in a DC movie. I think that's a better fit. She looks like it and.
Well, that's not going to get made.
Right.
So, let's go for Storm. Right. And Storm was raised in Kenya.
Right.
So it's, you know, even though she was born in New York.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I can see it though. But, another thing that worked for me, the camera work with all of the shots of suspicion. Those things, as bad as this movie was for me, every time they did one of the close up on a guy who's like kind of looking out the corner of his eye, like, should I be looking at this porn on my computer? Like, that shit made me think everyone was a terrorist.
Well, it was a super, I mean, it's basically one set the entire time, you know? It's just the plane. So it's a super cheap, you know, and I mean, that was the interesting thing about it. It's like, this is my thought, because I can split this movie up into two halves. In the first half, I consider before the whole plane is alerted about what's going on. Mm-hmm. You know, before he addresses them, it's this tight suspense thriller. And it was interesting because the whole time I'm thinking, when is everyone going to start panicking? And this becomes every movie ever on an airplane. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I'm kind of liking how subtle this is now. Even though it wasn't brilliantly made, it was, like, interesting enough. And he kills a dude and nobody knows. And it's like, all right, cool.
Right.
And then when he, you know, he's like, I'm an air marshal, and starts talking to everybody, it becomes an entirely different movie.
Yeah.
And it's kind of boring. And then when he does that speech, that fucking won me over. That is like, and it was unintentionally funny.
Yes.
But it was honestly the most I've laughed in a movie in a long time.
I laughed. I
went to see it with my buddy Dan St. Germain and my other buddy Matt Morano, and we burst out laughing, and everyone was staring at us. But when he just goes, it's true, I'm an alcoholic, my daughter's dead, I wasn't there for her. Like, phenomenal. Because I feel like Liam screams that into a mirror every day.
I laughed also. I laughed also, and it was a very sparsely packed theater, like maybe a dozen people in there. It's the middle of the day. But I was the only one who laughed, and then there was that awkward moment where I was like, I'm glad I sit in the front. Like, no one's gonna turn around. Like, they were all staring at my back. I was like, I'm just not gonna turn around right now. And I'm gonna enjoy this belly laugh at this man's pain that I'm pretty sure was not
supposed to be. Well, it's the racist in the theater. They're like, oh, the black guy usually talks through the whole thing. If he's just gonna laugh a little bit, it's fine.
Right. Just let him go. Just let him go, guys. Just having a moment. But yeah, I laughed so hard at that. Because the thing is, they build up to this crescendo in this scene where he's got to say something. By the way, the other funny part of this that was hilarious, and I think they did mean for it to be funny, when the crowd is literally about to riot and he gives them free mouths.
Yeah. Like, that's a joke. Yeah, yeah. It's
like, free air travel for a year.
If that alcoholic speech wasn't done in one take, I will do whatever I have to see all the other ones. If they just let him riff, I had a few Percocets. You know?
Yes, I tasted some of the cocaine. Okay, guys?
I thought the Old Boy remake was better than the original. I said it. Yeah. Like, he just becomes Bernie Mac. I ain't scared of you motherfuckers.
Yeah, there's a part where he beats up like five dudes who are trying to subdue him on the plane. Which probably did more to dispel the 9/11. Like, everybody after 9/11 was like, if you see somebody something going on a plane, we're just gonna jump on him. He won't be able to do anything. We'll beat his ass. And then Liam Neeson just beats the shit out of like five grown men. You're like, well, I guess maybe that wouldn't work. Stay in my seat.
See, now that's the thing. That's the thing about this movie. They graze over 9/11 halfway through, and you're like, okay, all right, I'm fine. But then when they fully address it, like, that's because the two moments between Liam Neeson's speech and then when the villain explains why he's doing what he's doing, mm-hmm. you're like, what the fuck? My dad died in 9/11?
Yeah,
that's why you're a villain in a movie.
And it's Air Marshal's fault, like, and because I almost thought, and they address it in the movie, but I really did think for a second he was gonna go, well, and you were like, I don't know, you were drunk and you didn't make the flight, and you're the reason that happened, or something personal. And he's just like, nah, not really you. I mean, you know, could be anybody.
And that's the thing too, that like this whole thing is because of how lax airport security was then. That's why his dad died. But how much worse? It's gotten a lot worse.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And then
I don't see what the thing is.
Yeah. And then also like, there's a part in this movie. Let's talk about some things that didn't work. We're kind of all over the place anyway, so might as well.
There's but so a part, is the movie, so it's
yeah, good. Yeah. You guys, if you've seen the movie and you're listening to this, you're like, this is about right. There's a part where the bad guy is.
They should have just called it Passenger 911.
Yeah, there's a part where the bad guy is paraded around the cabin in handcuffs. This is before you know he's a bad guy. And Liam Neeson is like, show me who told you to do such and such. And he ends up like poisoning a guy like there's a part earlier in the movie where the pilot gets poisoned, and Liam Neeson later finds like a pin gun or something that's used to shoot a dart through a hole in the bathroom that leads directly into the pilot's cabin. Like, what'd you think about stuff like that? Because I felt like they kept leading, like, we have these cameras, we have surveillance, and I think in a good movie, we should be able to go back and trace, like, okay, this is when that happened, this is who did that. In this movie, it just kind of felt like, I guess this must have happened because they said it, you know?
Well, here's the thing. So there's just that one random kid who has his cell phone up in the air recording the entire time. Mm-hmm. And that's how they catch the guy.
Yeah.
But no one ever tells that kid to stop when they confiscate everyone else's phone and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's the thing with, like, Julianne Moore's character. Way after they've made that part of the cabin off limits, she's just hanging out there all the time.
Right, right.
And it's not logical. It's just because her, as an actress, was probably required X amount of screen time.
There's a moment where he literally tells the co-pilot, who is now the only pilot because the main pilot is dead, lock this door, do not let anyone in here, period. And takes a gun and leaves. And I swear to God, the next scene, the stewardess walks up to the co-pilot in the cabin, he opens the door, they have a conversation. And I was like, what? What are the rules, man? No one respects this man and his job.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe they can smell the alcohol on his breath. Maybe that was the part that we can't tell as a movie audience because we can't smell him. Maybe everyone's just like, this guy is reeking of alcohol. No one listened to him because no one was listening to any of the advice that Liam Neeson was given to try to save the plane. One of the things that didn't work for me, his co-agent, co-air marshal, Jack Hammond, who was played by a really greasy looking, shady dude who did a good job as being a greasy looking kind of desperate dude. When he kills him in the bathroom, that like, I just was like, well, from this point on, you're going to either take one or two tactics. You're going to do everything you can to cover up this murder you just committed, or you have to immediately start fessing up so that people know, like, you're not the suspect. And he took the weirdest path, which is to kind of lie about it and then kind of tell the truth right when it made him look the guiltiest.
Yeah, but how badass is it when Liam kills him and then just with his finger pushes the sign to say occupied? And that's the thing. If you're just looking for those moments in this movie,
it's so good.
They're there.
Yeah.
And then it's fun. If you're looking at it as like an Academy Award winning actor in a thriller about a plane, you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah.
It's schlock, and it's good schlock.
One of my favorite things that happens too
because
is
it takes itself so seriously.
He takes two smoke breaks in this movie. Like not counting the one before the flight, but he takes a smoke break to start the flight. Then after he gets all the texts, he kills a guy, like, he goes back for a smoke break, like, all right, man, this shit's getting on my nerves. And that's how he finds the pin that has the poison in it. Like, it's just such a great
movie.
You're
trying to find logic in a movie where when part of the plane blows up and a little girl flies out, she's rescued because they grab her hand. You know, like seriously.
And he has the ribbon in his hand from his dead daughter, too. When he grabs her hand, I noticed that nice little move. All right, man. So, another thing that did not work for me, I did not understand why they needed two bad guys in this movie, especially the black dude. Two
different writers. That's why. No, seriously, like, this movie is written by Two-Face, and the coin has one side. Because it's that whole thing of, like, remember, they even, you know, the whole movie, they're saying who's ever doing this isn't doing this for the money. Yeah. It's personal. But then, and then they're even saying it's not about the money. This is why we're doing it, but we're also going to take the money.
Right. Right. Yeah. Then they're even going to plan into the, I did like that the brother was planning to escape. Like, he was like, I understand what you're talking about, white dude. You're absolutely right. 9/11 was terrible. Are you going to put your parachute on?
The black guy who looked like he was in full force?
Yeah. Oh, with a box in 2014?
The black guy who looked like a villain in the first House Party movie?
Yeah. He had a purple dress shirt. And he said he was going to a job interview. I was like, this brother won't be getting this job unless it's with Steve Harvey.
Yeah, was he Bill, Biv, or DeVoe? I don't
know what he was. Yeah, he was, the only thing he was missing was two other bodybuilding looking dudes threatening kid in play. But yeah, it was
so pussy.
Yeah, kick your fucking ass.
That's your regular voice, by the way.
Yeah, those are the only impressions I can do is all the high pitch voice people. So anybody needs somebody to do Q-Tip from Tribe Called Quest, give me a call. But yeah, that was the main things that didn't work. And the plot did feel just really thrown together. I hate, and like you said, obviously if you don't take it serious, it doesn't matter. But for me personally, I like really like movies that are clever enough where the bad guys revealed. And then I can go back through the movie and go, oh yeah, I remember this scene and that scene meant that, you know, that, oh, that's how he was able to do this thing. And this one, it just kind of is like, just kidding, guys. I'm the bad guy. And you're like, all right, well, he's the bad guy. And, we're just going to have to accept that.
It was never, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It was never trying to give you a way to solve it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because that's the thing. You could ask 100 people that went to see this movie if they all thought, you know, who the killer would be. And if no one put those two guys, does that make the movie smart or does that make the movie dumb?
Right.
You know?
Yeah, because they even say, there's two things. They say they do background checks on everyone, and apparently they never got anything to help. So it's like, what's the point of a background check if you're not even going to get the two guys who are the criminals, you know? I was like, you know, they were supposed to be cleared of suspicion, but apparently they're not. And then the other thing was at the end, the stewardess says all of the flight and crew are passengers and crew are accounted for. But I'm pretty sure like 4 or 5 people died. Like she said that you saved the plane, all passenger and crew are accounted for, but I'm 100% sure that the pilot died, the other air marshal died minimum, and then the two terrorists. So like, I don't think they were, someone's got their math off there. But
this is a movie where everyone is all watching CNN at the exact same time when they're revealing a very specific plot point.
Yeah.
It's, there isn't one person watching Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
And why also is, like, CNN comes on and goes off, by the way, but why did the news just, like, run with that footage? That's probably the most realistic part of the movie, is the news going, we don't need to verify or check any sources on this, right, guys? Let's just run this footage from some kid on an iPhone.
See, here's what would have been realistic if they started talking about what was going on the plane, and then they cut to a story about Kim Kardashian.
Speaking of hijacking, this little puppy will hijack your heart when we get back on 9 o'clock news. What's
that
killing
plane
the kids?
Is bound for disaster. And speaking of bound, round two.
Right. Yeah, everyone on that plane is gonna die. And what's killing your kids? It could be in your water faucet. We'll be right back. But that part was kind of realistic. So I actually would say that was a good thing, that everybody watched the news. Also, a thing that did work was, when everybody huddled up and decided to, try to beat him up. I thought that was, cause I kept thinking like, you know, after a while, God acts erratic on a flight after 9/11. Someone's going to do the, hey guys, should we like fuck this guy up or not moment. And, it took a very, very, very long time. But, you know, an hour into the flight, they finally went, let's fuck this dude up. All right. And,
yeah, but they would have, that was the thing. Like, if they were going to fuck him up, they would have, you know, like, he'd be dead. You know, it's like, no, wait. He does have something to say. He is telling the truth.
Yeah. They did stop and listen to him, and he told him he was alcoholic. And it helped. Also, what did you think about the bomb plan? Let's put the bomb by the door, lower the plane to 8,000 feet, and we'll probably live.
I mean, it's terrible. Yeah. But it's a different movie. That's the thing. You can tell, like, two different people wrote two halves of this movie, and then a third person put it together, you know? Mm-hmm. Because it's like, the first half is, you know, killing one person, then another. The second half is bomb. Right. You know? And they try to have it both ways.
They really do, man. The English dude who's the pilot.
It's like a girl who says she's a lesbian while she's with her boyfriend.
Right. She's making out at the bar. But yeah, the pilot who lands the plane, probably my favorite scene at the end, is just him when he goes, fuck it, and dives the plane in a straight nose dive to 8,000 feet, with two.
Well,
like,
it's the best impromptu landing since Keenan and Snakes on a Plane.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was amazing, man. All right, let's rate this bad boy, man. We here at the Spoiler Movie Reviews, we have a scale from 0 to 5. It's called the More Epic Than Love John scale. 0 being man, fuck you. And 5 being the fuck you waiting for. Go see this shit. Mike, what would you give this from 0 to 5?
I'd give it a 3.
All right. 3. That's that's $5 AMC before noon special matinee, which is actually
exactly
how I saw it.
Like, know what you're getting into. Know that it's going to be fun. You're not seeing a serious movie. This is a kind of movie, if you see it with your girlfriend, you will not get laid that night. If you see it with your guy friends, you'll go to Buffalo Wild Wings afterwards.
Right. You can convince your girlfriend to see it by saying Julianne Moore is in it, and it's about an alcoholic dad who loses his daughter. But then, like, that last 30 minutes, guys, is going to get you in some hot water.
If you want to see a Academy Award winning actress play a stewardess with two lines?
Also, you know what's funny about this movie, man?
I would say, Dion, go see this movie.
I would say, I was surprised that no one mailed it in. Like, I was expecting somebody to kind of mail in a performance, but I even felt, even as annoying as she was, Julianne Moore tried. The screenwriters. Other than the directors, screenwriters, the script, you know, craft services, I was expecting, you know, this movie had a $50 million budget. Apparently it's already made $35 million plus $20 million foreign. So it's already made
a $50 million budget, and 40 million of it was on Liam's whiskey.
For me personally, I would rate it a 2. I think this will be a good Netflix movie for most people. You know, sit down. You're not going to be expecting much by then. You know, and I think the lower your expectations, the more fun you'll have with this movie. I walked out of it. The reason I think I was a little more disappointed is because I wanted to, my favorite genre of movie is the quote unquote impossible white man movie. This is like your stuff like Die Hard, Olympus Has Fallen, you know, stuff of this nature. Even Taken, I would say. And this was a little bit more of a thriller on a plane, just kind of one set piece. I was hoping the plane would land 40 minutes in, and then we have like airport death, and then him going to the bad guy's house death, and all this other stuff. And I didn't get that, but it's probably more than I should have expected from this movie. So
I like that most of it was on the plane. I like that claustrophobic feel. I mean, on a scale of 1 to 10, I would give this a 9.11 because that's when my father died.
And now you hate air marshals specifically because they.
What if it was because he's like, you know, my dad died on 9/11, and Alan Jackson and Toby Keith wrote all these songs about it, and we never saw royalties.
My dad died on 9/11. Oh no! He just had a heart attack. He's from Tennessee. But I was really
from your enthusiasm episode. I remember where the guy's like, my cousin died on 9/11. He was in a bike accident.
Yeah. Right. My dad died on 9/11. But I was more pissed because I really wanted to watch a game and that's all they would show on TV. So I'm mad at you, Liam Neeson. And, you're going to have to give me $150 million. Oh, also, the guy who plays Eli from Boardwalk Empire plays basically the voice on the phone for the whole movie. I thought it was so funny that he got hung up on at least 10 times in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, they even give Liam Neeson an old school phone that you can hang up instead of a cell phone just so he can hang up on that motherfucker every time he's trying to give Liam Neeson some advice so that he doesn't look like a terrorist.
I would say that Liam Neeson could be the only person in human history to have a rotary phone in his pocket.
Just so he can hang up on bad guys.
Wait, I have to take this. Yeah. And he just spins around.
Yeah. Oh my God, man. The unintentional comedy of like the seventh time he hangs up on that guy. I also was laughing out loud at all those moments where the guy's like, listen, we gave you the money. You don't have to do this anymore. He's just like, you don't know what you're talking about. Click. It's like, okay, well, that's going to make you look more terroristy.
Yeah. There's a reason Liam Neeson was never in Jerky Boys CDs.
No, my refrigerator isn't running. Click.
Prince Albert in a can, go fuck yourself.
Also, man, I can't wait for the sequels to this because it's making money. It's a January release that's making money. I already have predicted it'll be Nonstop 5 Slayover is what I'm looking for. I'm assuming in some sequel we're gonna have an international flight that does like to the moon. Maybe,
see, I would say like a movie like this I would take this over Ride Along any day of the week.
Mm-hmm.
Because agreed. I laughed during this.
Yeah, agreed. And Ride Along was the perfect amount of bad that you can't even enjoy how bad it is. You're just mad that it's taking so long.
Well, because Ride Along never deviates from the formula. Mm-hmm. And gives you exactly what you're thinking and expecting and never goes over the top or anything with it. It's just, yeah, here you go.
Yeah.
And this movie was wacky and like head scratching at times.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah. I'm telling you, the key to this movie for me was that every actor committed to the parts, man. Like, even like they played it all straight. Even with me laughing, it's only good because they never take that point. They take it serious 100%. And, I think Ride Along had people that knew that movie was bullshit and were like, Lawrence Fishburne shows up. He's like, when do I get paid? Okay, guys.
he is so weird in that movie because I think we talked about this on the episode I was yeah. on, and like, because they make him seem like a big deal.
Yeah.
He's never gotten that like huge treatment of like, it's Lawrence Fishburne.
Right. He's just, the thing is, in the movie world, he's just a guy named Omar who no one's ever seen before. So it's not even like he has some like huge, they don't even build the myth up in the movie to make you go, oh my God, Lawrence Fishburne is Omar. This is the most incredible thing. It's like they act like they got Denzel Washington to be exactly. Omar.
Exactly. But that's the thing. Lawrence Fishburne would be the villain in a buddy cop comedy released in January.
Right.
That's something he does. That's not a get.
You're right. The way I saw it was, you guys wasted 20 more minutes of Lawrence Fishburne's screen time. Like, he could have, yeah. he would have been all throughout this movie. You could have had him in the background of other scenes and pretending to be Ice Cube's best friend. Like, do something else with him.
Yeah, there's a difference between a get and an already have.
he wasn't a get. He was a has been, like a gets been or something.
I just realized though, do you think the point was supposed to be like a Boys in the Hood homage? And that's why it was supposed to be like this big reveal?
I think literally, they looked in their Rolodex and they went, so let's try to get, Morgan Freeman for this. And they were like, no, he won't do it. Sam Jackson would be good. Yeah, Sam's not returning our calls. Denzel, come on, man, be serious. And they just get to the point where they're like, look, Lawrence Fishburne says he'll do it and he can be here by noon. And that's how you get that film.
Yeah, well, it would have taken too much money and CGI to make it look like Sidney Poitier could walk on his own. So.
Also, would have been a bigger get. Would have been a bigger get.
Oh, it's him? That'd be amazing.
Sidney Poitier in a wheelchair. Bigger get than Lawrence Fishburne, Kia salesman, for a ride along.
Maybe. I used to say Sidney Poitier, great actor, but after the Oscars, I say Sidney Poitier, greatest accessory that Angelina Jolie has ever worn.
Yeah, she tried to adopt them. It was my favorite thing about that. I know we're way on a tangent here, but my favorite thing about the Oscars that night with that announcement is they bring Sidney Poitier up there, and I think that award was for like best director. Mm-hmm. And in my mind,
Steve McQueen's gonna
right. win. You're like, obviously, you do not get this poor decrepit 90-year-old man to basically just hobble out here on the stage to read anyone other than Steve McQueen's name. Impossible. And they open up the folder, and he had been like struggling through his lines at this point, but they open up the folder, and I'm, you know, I'll never be able to confirm this, but I am so sure he saw that that wasn't Steve McQueen and said, I'm not reading that shit.
I mean, it doesn't help that he also looks like a human chia pet. Yeah. Like, if you took all the hair out.
He looked so, so bad, man. But yeah, I think he saw, Alfonso Cuarón and was like, I don't know how to pronounce it, and that dude ain't black.
He would have just said Adele Dazeem.
Yeah. Well, all right, man. That was our review for Nonstop. You guys got
Sidney Poitier is proof that black can crack.
Right. Yes. Not only can it crack, but you will go back. You will go back after Sidney
Poitier. I think I just saw Ruby Dee with her weave off.
He was still gentlemanly and all that, but it was very weird that whoever planned, you know what? The people who wrote Nonstop must have planned for him to be the person to announce, not a black guy. That's all I heard. Like, it didn't even matter who won. He could just be like, and the winner is not a black dude. What?
If the person from, Nonstop, did the Oscars, the winners would be Alfonso Cuarón and Steve McQueen.
The good news too is, I also feel like Sidney Poitier wouldn't have read it if it was, Lee Daniels also. So, you know, it wasn't just because the dude wasn't black.
Although I could believe that he would take his mask off and it turns out it's been Lee Daniels the entire time.
Yeah, and it's Tyler Perry presenting him. So he would.
No, Tyler Perry comes out to Stone Cold's theme music with the glass breaking in the steel chair.
Oh, all right, man. Oh, this has been another episode of Spoiled Movie Reviews. Make sure you check out Mike Lawrence, man. Headlining Caroline Sunday at 7:30 if you're in the New York area. Also his podcast, which I listen to. Really good, man. I really do enjoy it. Nerd of Mouth. MikeLawrenceComedy.com, and then on Twitter he's the Mike Lawrence. Like I said, he's been on At Midnight a lot lately, so I've been watching that show. Watching all the comedians on my timeline contribute to the hashtags every night around midnight is pretty cool. So make sure you guys check them out. We'll see you guys next time on Spoiled Movie Reviews. Peace out.
Get your act together. My life's a movie. I leave you in an act forever.
My life's like a movie. My life's like a movie. My life's like a movie.